Hello, everybody. It's Kevin Cotfer from the band Miras, and you are listening Thunder Underground.
Welcome to episode 396 of the Thunder Underground podcast. Trent here as always. This week is really cool. We've got Kevin Codford of the band Mirath here to talk about their brand new album Karma, and of course a lot of history involving the band as well. Kevin's been involved with the band going back close to 20 years now as the producer, and he is now a full-time member of the band as of just a year or two ago. We talk about all that, how all that came together, the journey that Kevin's been on with this band throughout the years. The man is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to all the different styles that Mirath brings to their music. They're a progressive metal band out of Tunisia that incorporates Middle Eastern elements into their music, but they also incorporate orchestration, classical style elements. They, at times to me, remind me of power metal elements. You've got the operatic metal elements as well, but the bassist is that prog metal that these guys are just masters of. So if you're not familiar with this band, I highly suggest you check them out, and a great place to start is the brand new album Karma that just came out last month. It's just been out a little over a month now. Solid rock and roll here in 2024 from Mirath. So before we jump into that, I need to let you know who sponsors this podcast. DEB Concerts, a promoter based right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that brings tons of great acts to this area. Bands throughout the last several years like Saxon, Last in Line, Kix, LA Guns, John Karabi. The list is great and long, and it continues later this month, here in just a couple weeks, April 24th. Faster Pussycat is returning to the Venue Shrine. Good friends of this podcast, Dime Store Riot, will be opening that show, so you don't want to miss that. Hit up the Venue Shrine to get ticket info. Hit up debconcerts.com to get more info on this and everything else they've got going on. And what else might they have going on? They also book the Roadhouse stage at Rocklahoma every year. The Rocklahoma lineup was just announced this past week, and the DEB stage features headliners Tom Kiefer of Cinderella, Winger, the Atomic Punks, and Vixen. Four great acts there. One of which has never been there, two of which haven't been there in well over 12, 13 years, and one of which hasn't been there in like 5 or 6 years. So it's always great to see stuff that isn't, you know, recycled from a year or two ago. So very cool, very happy with that. So hit up DEB on all the socials and follow them so you don't miss future announcements. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all at DEB Concerts. We've also got Sunset Tattoo, a tattoo shop located in Midtown Tulsa. Their tattoos are done good and proper. They're native boned. They've got three artists on staff, one of which is a female artist. You can call, text, message ahead to set up a time to go in there to talk about what work you're looking to have done. If you've got an idea but don't know how to put it together, that's what Sunset Tattoo is here to help you with. They also accept walk-ins. You can get online to check out photos of all their previous work. Their socials are Sunset Tattoo Tulsa on both Facebook and Instagram. I've personally had work done by Jake more than once. I'm very happy with it. I know that if you get over there and get work done from Sunset Tattoo, you'll be happy with it as well. So head over there or hit them up and tell them you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. All right, like I said up front, Mirath incorporates a lot of elements into their music. They are from Tunisia, so they do incorporate a lot of Middle Eastern elements, and I've always been a fan of any band adding just unique elements that aren't in your typical, just your standard music, whether it be standard metal, standard rock, standard pop, doesn't matter. Just when someone incorporates, whether it be from their own culture or whether it just be something they love, they bring that into the music to make it more unique. Sometimes it works great, sometimes it doesn't. But in Mirath's case, it's definitely working great. They also incorporate, like I said, a lot of orchestration, a lot of classical style elements into the music, which has always been, you know, a kind of a figure with, you know, your operatic or your thematic metal bands, you know, out of the Europe area. But they do it, of course, like I said, mixed with the Middle Eastern elements, mixed with the progressive metal elements, some parametal elements in there. All this together gives them a very unique feel. And the new album, Karma, is no exception. You know, this is 12 songs that just take you on a basically a journey. You know, I love, we've talked repeatedly about this over the past 9 years on this podcast, the hashtag all killer, no filler thing that we've always went with as a slogan, you know, really applies to this album Karma and what these guys do, because it's not just a couple cool songs and some filler thrown in. You've got a full cohesive album from a band that has continuously released this type of music. And Kevin Codford is the brainchild behind all of those elements, whether it be the orchestration, whether it be the Middle Eastern elements, when it comes to writing, when it comes to production. And for the longest time, he just handled the, you know, the writing, or excuse me, the co-writing and the production side of things, you know, from their early days on to just a couple years ago. And then he stepped into the live setting as the keyboardist, and now he is a full-time member of the band. He's out promoting this album, talking about Karma, and of course talking about his history in music. So let's jump into it and hear what Kevin has to say. Here's Kevin Codford of Mirath.
Basically quite happy with the result and the feedback from the fans. I mean, we worked a lot on this album, especially between the during the pandemic, the COVID. We were touring in Europe and the border closed, so I needed to come back in my little tiny house as soon as possible. Yeah. But unfortunately for the Tunisian guys, they couldn't make it because the government didn't bring some flights. So they were stuck in France, and they told me, okay, what should we do? So basically I told them, okay, come, we're going to try to find a solution. And unfortunately we couldn't find a solution for 6 months. So they stayed at my tiny house for 6 months. And for the first time in Mira's history, we had the opportunity to compose together, which was not possible for the previous albums. And I think it's the main difference between this album and the previous ones.
How did you do it previously? Was it always just like via, via Zoom or something? Or
it was really digital. I mean, for example, I had an idea. I provide the idea through Gmail, and we go back and forth, and I'm waiting 3 days for the guys to come back with another idea. So it's a really digital process. Generally, what I've been told is during COVID, a lot of bands learn how to work digitally. But Basically for Mirath, it has been the exact opposite because of COVID, we could, let's say compose like a regular band. I mean,
what took it so long to get the album put out? If you had wrote these songs during the pandemic, did you wait to record them until after touring and everything? Or
It took a little bit longer than usual because, you know, a lot of bands stopped music because of COVID, because it had a kind of big impact on finances of all the bands. And it has been quite difficult to remotivate everybody and to rebuild it from scratch. And this is something that has been a little bit difficult, and that the reason it took a little bit more time. But now we are in a good shape, and of course, then the next album will be released sooner. I mean, I'm already working on it, so things are changing for the good.
Right. Well, when you guys spent all that, you said 6 months together at your home, I would assume it brought the band closer just as people as well. How do you think that helped the band as a whole besides just the writing process?
It definitely helped a lot for the writing process, because when you woke up every morning, you have a guitar player or a bass player in front of you, and you say to them, okay, let's try this riff. So you can do and you can build some really emotional ideas because you are playing real time with real musicians, which is really cool. Beside this, we learn more about each other. And it has been also very difficult because imagine six guys plus my wife plus my dog in a tiny area. So it was not really, really easy every day.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, so you guys have been playing a lot of these songs live last year and everything since you'd had them written. Like, what has the response been like in the live setting when you guys are playing the new tracks to fans that might not have known them yet?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we are used to play songs live before a release because
Okay.
really, really important for me to try to feel the feedback of the people, because when you compose a song and the song is sounding good on album, it's a total different story when you are performing this song on stage. So you have to adapt some stuff. The arrangement are not exactly the same. The mood is not exactly the same. The more you play live, the better you are improving yourself to play this song live. And I love to play before the release because it let me a lot of iteration to improve. So the first time we played new songs and nobody knew it, it was for Sweden Rock next year, last year. I was a little bit stressed about the reaction because fans usually like to listen what they already know.
Right.
And during this gig, we played three songs totally unknown, but it was a good opportunity for me to see the feedback. And basically, we had the chance to have a good sound. The PA was good, and it was easy for the fans, even if they didn't knew the songs, to understand what was going on. And from what people said to me, they told me, yeah, the songs are, yeah, very, very, I mean, groovy, open, and we like it. And so, yeah, it has been a good test for us.
Have you ever, like, when you've played songs like that live, and like you said, the first time get some feedback, have you ever changed anything about it before you've went to the final recording process before it's been released?
No, because for this album we played live after the recording.
Okay.
The recording was already done. But we did this for a previous album, and of course we fine-tuned some stuff because you realize that some arrangement, for example, are not sounding as good as you expect in live performance, or it's too messy, or there are too many layers, or I don't know. So you take this opportunity to fine-tune and change your composition before recording it. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, on the last album in an interview, you had said that the songs are written and rearranged as heavy metal songs, and that's the first time you had done that, where you wrote them, you didn't write them specifically as a heavy metal song. Is that process you tried again, or is that just like a one-off kind of situation?
No. I think from the beginning, each songs we did with Miras was songs with a simple piano and vocals or guitar and vocals.
Okay.
That's what I call a song. I mean, a song doesn't need metal, doesn't need arrangement, doesn't need anything. A song is a good melody, which is coherent. You can feel a climax. And a song is just managing the climax and the harmony and a lead vocalist. That's it. And when you achieve this and you are quite happy with the result, you can start to build on top of this metal arrangement, because I mean, metal is just an arrangement on top of harmonies. That's it. I mean,
Yeah.
like every style.
Is it the same when you write a song, say on the keyboards or the guitar separately? Do you ever write like a guitar, like something on the keyboards and change it to a guitar line, or is it always specifically written?
Yeah, no, it's specifically written because you can't play any riff on the piano. So first of all, when I start to compose a song, I mean, I'm not the only one in the band to compose, but I'm telling you my own view. The piano is the best instrument to provide a complete harmony.
Okay.
But of course, it would be stupid to play guitar riff on the piano. So if I have an idea of a guitar riff, I take a guitar.
Okay.
Sure.
Right. But when you write like the orchestral arrangements on some of these songs, like does that come separately from the song, like after the song's written, or does sometimes you write that stuff first, or is that how's that process work for you?
It depends. I tend to compose the arrangement along with the song when the song is slow, because when you are composing, writing something slow, you have a lot of gap to fill. You
Right.
know, there is a lot of gaps. And as a keyboard player, I tend to fill the gap with orchestral arrangement, where the guitar player would tend to fill the gaps with the guitar arrangement. But for my side, when the song is minimalist and slow, I tend to put a lot of arrangement during the process of composition. And when the song is mid-tempo to fast tempo, I tend to do the arrangement after the song is finished. So it allow me not to put too much layers of arrangement.
So whenever you write it, the orchestral arrangement after the song's written, do you just kind of like, how does that process work for you? You sit down and just listen to the song over and over and then just kind of feel what you think belongs in those spaces or?
It depends. If you want to take a concrete example, there is a song on the last album named Into the Light. We released the video on YouTube. It started with the idea of the theme, the principal theme, which is a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And for me, it was a sound of a trumpet directly. So as it was a sound of a trumpet, I directly came to my I opened my Cubase and I directly composed it with trumpets, and after it I put it drums and guitars. But for other songs, for example, Candles Cry, everything is based around guitar. So we started with the guitar. After the guitar, the rhythmical pattern on the drums, the lead vocal. And when everything was finished, which was sounding like a really 80s song, a song from the 80s, we put it a little bit of arrangement on top of it. So there is no specific recipe, because each song is unique, and I don't have a routine or a specific process to tell you. I mean, it depend on the song.
Any of the Middle Eastern elements that are added, is that kind of dealt with the same way? Like after the song's written, just put this on here to where, we feel it suits best kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. For example, and it depends the scales. For example, the oriental arrangement, when we put it, there are a lot of violins, sometimes with quarter tones. So quarter tones are not fitting all the modes. It would be, from my point of view, useless to use Arabic violins to emphasize Lydian mode, for example, or Mixolydian mode. But when you have harmonic minor to play, it fits better this kind of mood. So the arrangement are interdependent also with the harmony you are using into your song. So again, there is no magical recipe around it. It depend the harmony and the mood of the song. But generally, the oriental arrangements are I do this after the main song is finished.
So that's entirely you as well. The handling those parts. Okay.
It's 100% me. It has not been the case for the previous albums. We were working together with the previous keyboard player. And for this album, the band wanted me to play on stage with them also, because they told me, "Kevin, you are playing piano for Miras for 15 years, and nobody knows you. We want you on stage." And I told them, "Yeah, I'm a kind of shy people. I prefer to stay in my studio." And they told me, "Yeah, come on. It would be nice for people to see that, yeah, the piano part composed in the album is played by the keyboardist on stage with us, which could be logical."
Right.
And I told them, "Yeah, okay, why not? Let's give a try." And beside this, we had some little bit of argue with the with Elias, the previous keyboard player. Nothing personal. It was just a different point of view on how we want to make music. So he left the band, and technically, I was the only one left to do all the arrangements. So, for Karma, 100% of the arrangements are done by me. Yeah.
Did that change your approach in any way when writing or recording as the producer? Did it change the approach as far as how, since you're doing everything solely on your own with the keyboards and piano arrangements and everything?
Not really. It didn't change my approach. It changed maybe a bit the result on this on the album,
Okay.
because of course I love Oriental arrangement, but I'm French, and I love also all the arrangement of French music from the 80s. So I think that I put it on this album a little bit more arrangement from the 80s French arrangement than Oriental arrangement. It's just the difference between this album and the previous ones.
Going back to when you first connected with the band, with producing and doing session work, were you familiar with what was your knowledge of like Middle Eastern music or Oriental sounds, that kind of thing? Like, was this brought to you when you came to the band, or did you already have knowledge of that kind of music?
I had a little bit of knowledge, but when you are not born there, it's quite difficult for regular guy from Europe to really understand and feel all the quarter tones, because quarter tones in the violins, you need to listen a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. So at the beginning, 15 years ago, I didn't have this knowledge, but I traveled maybe 500 times to Tunisia. I spent months there to practice and to learn the music. So it came over time, and I started really to understand how to build Oriental arrangements, and it came a day where a band named Sepultura that asked me to do Oriental arrangement for them. So I gave it a try. It worked well, and so I think that at this time I was ready to fulfill all the writing of this Oriental arrangement within Miras.
The band's always kind of been known for, mixing, different styles of metal along with, bringing in the elements of Tunisian culture and everything. Like, was that when you came into the band, was that always the plan, to push it to the boundaries like that? Or was it just kind of something that naturally happened when you guys started working together?
It's difficult to say. I mean, when I met the guys, they were very young people. It was in Tunisia. I was playing with my previous band named Adagio, which was at this time a kind of famous band in France, and we were opening for Robert Plant, who was playing in Carthage, Tunisia, and just before Adagio was playing a little band called Ecstasy. It was four of the band members of Miras, and when I met them, I told them, I want to work with you guys. Change your name. Try to find a real singer, and I'm in. So we started to work together quite quickly after this show in Carthage. And at the beginning, strangely, as Tunisian musicians, they wanted to do maximum of Europe music from Europe, because they have spent their maybe 15 years listening to Tunisian music, so they know how to play Tunisian music, and they wanted to do regular metal. And I told them, yeah, it's not a good idea. I mean, you have your expertise domain is to blend metal with your music, because Tunisian music and nobody knows, so you should work more on Tunisian influences. So it started this way.
Earlier you mentioned 80s French music, kind of incorporating that in what you did with this album. Like, are there specific examples you could give someone like me or anyone that isn't familiar with that at all? Like, if stuff,
I don't.
from the 80s that you would suggest to someone?
Definitely, I don't know if you will enjoy it, but there is a pianist, a woman, which is playing piano and singing also, and her name is Véronique Sanson. And Véronique Sanson, for me, is one of the best composer in France. I mean, nowadays the music in France is total shit from my point of view, but at this time we had great composers. And yeah, Véronique Sanson is part of the greatest composer in France. And she's one of my main influence, basically, because I did classical. I started piano at the age of 4, and from 4 to 13 years old, I was doing 100% of piano, but of classical music, excuse me. And just after my 13, I started to study the composing process of this woman. And I learned a lot about French harmonies, let's say, because there is a taste in of harmonies in France, which is specific to France. So, yep.
At what point did you go from like that style of like classical and everything to open it up to other things and to where you've become now with, being involved with metal and, still composing music as well? Like where did that kind of open up for you? At what age?
Maybe 15, 16, when I discovered the band Angra from
Okay.
Brazil. And when I discovered this band, I told to myself, okay, I didn't knew that it was possible to do aggressive music or metal music or whatever you name it, and blend it with classical influences. Because André Matos, the lead singer of Angra, was a real big fan of classical music and music from movies. And at this moment, when I it was the first song was Nothing to Say, and I told to myself, yeah, this is what I want to do professionally. I mean, I want to be a professional musician. So at the age of 15, I choose to be a professional musician right away.
Whenever you listen to music now, are you mainly listening to the classical or like what kind of music do you listen to if you're just driving in your car or doing something where you're not focusing on your own music?
Lot of fusion and jazz music.
Okay.
I love Sia. I think she's a pure genius, and it would be impossible for me to compose any songs from her, because there is something magical. When she compose, she can do something minimalist. I mean, it's all the songs of Sia are based on four or five scores, maximum. I mean, it's really minimalist, but the way she put emotion on the vocal lines is quite unique. And I love very much Sia. I'm listening also a little bit of Placebo, of Muse, progressive music from the 80s, like Pink Floyd, Genesis, Marillion. Yes, Rush, Dream Theater also, but not a lot of metal, to be honest.
I mean, I know you've only been, playing with the band live for, in the grand scheme of things, a short period, but like, has the band outside of Prog Power, has the band played in the United States or has it been a really
No,
long time?
no, no, no. For the moment, I mean, playing in the EU. In the USA is very expensive for a band, basically.
Right.
So we will try our best to I mean, I think that the price of a visa is something like it would cost maybe 10,000 euros for the band.
Okay.
Yeah, so we need to tour. Maybe the best way would be to open for a bigger band in the USA.
Right.
Everything is matter of money, so
Yeah, I mean, I know that, yeah, there's a lot of bands from, Europe or Asia or whatever that, don't always make it to America that we don't get to see. So, I hope that at some point you guys will get to make the trip over here so we get a chance to see as well.
yeah, we will try. We give the try to do a South America tour. It was a huge bet because I had no idea if we could sell some tickets. And beside the extreme complexity of visas, because we played six different countries and it was six different visas,
Wow.
because the three band members from Tunisia are not allowed to travel anywhere. So each time they travel, it's a visa. For French people, it's much more easier, but for them, it's really complicated. So beside this, all the venue were full. Basically, it was not big venues. It was venues between 500 people and 800, and it was full. So I was very surprised, and I'm pretty sure that we can make it in the US, but we still need to find a little bit of money and logistical tricks to make it happen.
Right. So what's the band's plan for the rest of the year? I know you've got some dates lined up, but what are you guys looking at for throughout 24?
For the moment, we are focusing on the summer festival, and we are going to announce European tour starting in September normally. And beside this, I'm 100% focused on the composition, on the writing of the new album, because we have to be faster. So
Yeah. So is the hopes on that next year, or are you going to push that a couple years, or how do you have a plan on that yet? No.
I don't know. It will be ready next year, but when you release an album, it's you are dependent on the schedules of the record labels. So I have no idea.
All right, man. Well, I really love everything on Karma, and I appreciate you taking the time with me today, and hope to
Yeah.
see you guys live at some point in the future.
Of course, man. So thank
Cool.
you very much.
There you go, Kevin Codford of Mirath. A huge thank you to Shane of Atom Splitter PR for his continued help in supporting this podcast. And of course, a massive thank you to Kevin for taking some time out there to hit me up on Zoom, talking about everything we just talked about there, covering the brand new album Karma that came out March 8th. Like I said, that's been out now, as you can tell, what, about 5 weeks? If you have not heard this thing, do it as soon as you stop listening to this here in just a few minutes. Album's fantastic. This is a great band that more people in this area need to be exposed to. So check out Mirath. And again, a huge thank you to Kevin for taking some time out of his day. All right, if this is your first time listening, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. We've got 395 episodes previous to this one that you can check out. Just last week, the guys from In Theory returned for the fourth time. The week before that, for the first time ever, Living Color, Vernon Reid, and Corey Glover were both on this podcast. Quite an honor for me. The week before that, another amazing honor, Adrian Vandenberg, formerly of Whitesnake, currently and previously of Vandenberg as well, was on here. Huge fan of that guy. That was so cool. Then the week before that, Jack Russell of Great White was on here. How cool was that? That was another great honor. Then before that, we had on Brian Tatler of Saxon and Diamondhead. We've had on members of Testament, Megadeth, Overkill, Death Angel. If you don't like thrash, we've had on members of Avatar, Sons of Texas, Shinedown, Hellstorm, Three Doors Down. If you don't like modern radio rock, we've had on Dee Snider from Twisted Sister was on here. Jeff Tate, formerly of Queensryche, was on here. Frank Cannon of Tesla has been on here multiple times. Damon Johnson of Lynyrd Skynyrd and Brother Kane has been on here multiple times. We've had on members of Def Leppard, Deep Purple, Motley Crue, Michael Monroe from Hanoi Rocks was on here, Glenn Hughes, Reb Beach of Winger and Whitesnake. The list is great and long. Covers pretty much the gamut from soft rock, John Waite of Bad English and The Babies, and of course, just solo fame was on here at one point, to extreme stuff. Trevor, rest in peace, from Black Dahlia Murder was on here. Like I said, we cover it all. So check out these past episodes. Wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you listen right now, hit like, subscribe, or follow so you don't miss future episodes. You can listen directly on the website, thethroneunderground.com, but pretty much anywhere podcasts are heard, Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Music, which is about to merge with YouTube Music. Mixcloud, SoundCloud, pretty much anything with cloud in the title, you can check us out. You Google it, the Ozzy song from Osmosis will come up, but we should be the first or second thing under that that you find. Future episodes, next week, Pete Summit of Crashing Wayward will be returning to this podcast for the third time. Very cool. Absolutely love this band, brand new band. Well, I say brand new. In the grand scheme of things, brand new. They've been around a few years. And then the week after that, Keith Wallen of Breaking Benjamin will be on the podcast for the first time. That was a very cool conversation. I'm really happy with that one. Got about 45 minutes talking about all kinds of stuff with Keith. So can't wait for you to hear that one as well. But in the meantime, like I said, dig back through some past stuff and be on the lookout for what's coming. After Keith, I don't have things that I can announce yet because they haven't happened, but I can tell you that obviously Keith will be episode 398. So that means episode 400 is right around the corner. And unbelievably, the timing of this, I can't even believe it. The timing of episode 400 will time out into mid-May. And mid-May will be the 9th anniversary of this podcast. We always have a little celebration for the anniversary in May. And then, of course, every time there's a 100th episode, a celebration, but they don't line up until now. We'll be talking about that. And once that is all confirmed, I will announce what's going to happen there. But you'll hear about that, of course, within a month. All right. I'm going to jump off here and quit rambling. Once again, massive thank you to DB Concerts, Sunset Tattoo, Adam Splitter PR, and Kevin Cotford. And until next time.
Thunder Underground, y'all.